Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for the invitation to speak. Thank you to Thomas, Eleanor, and Rachel for your assistance. And thank you to Glad, Chris, and Judy for the inspiring readings, and to Gary, and Claire, and Mary for the song you'll hear during the offertory, and Christine and Brad for the beautiful music today. For the past 9 months, I've received a wide range of treatments for breast cancer. I've undergone physical and emotional changes that require deep strength, persistence, and self-reflection. I've worked to unlearn many harmful ways of thinking about myself to help my body heal. My goal was to journey through cancer with an open heart, creativity, positivity, and vulnerability. I never really imagined how much would happen to me in terms of my growth during this year. Today I want to talk to you about my learnings and unlearnings during my cancer year, especially as they relate to being an educator and to personal healing. Throughout my profession as a teacher of children and a teacher of teachers, I've pursued the idea that my role is to facilitate self-actualization, so students and I may be and become our authentic selves through learning together. The great Brazilian teacher, educational philosopher, and activist Paulo Freire said, "The teacher is, of course, an artist, but being an artist does not mean that he or she can make the profile, can shape the students. What the educator does in teaching is to make it possible for students to become themselves." Yet in many ways, schooling prevented self-actualization for both my diverse classroom and myself. The environment, curriculum, and pedagogy often emphasized the discipline and surveillance of young bodies and minds in order to manage classrooms and compartmentalize growth and development into discrete academic subjects like science, math, language arts. Rather than teach to the whole child and education's humanizing potential for society, which is what I wanted to do. We can see such surveillance in early 1800s schooling when white poor children were taught en masse to be assembly line factory workers. We can see this surveillance during the early 1900s through the U.S. government's relocation of indigenous youth to boarding schools. Native American children around the country were forcibly removed from their homes and land to be Americanized in these boarding schools. During their education there, the children's indigenous language and culture was erased as they learned English only, and Anglo knowledge, culture, dress, and norms of behavior to the exclusion of their own. These boarding schools, today children all over the U.S. are disciplined to behave and think within a gendered binary, using boy-girl lines, disciplining the expressive male body, shaming girls through derogatory language like, "you hit like a girl," and ignoring gender-fluid expressions of identity. Being bilingual was punished here in California for years in English-only classrooms and has only recently been embraced again by the public. And teaching to the test during the early 1900s has left a legacy of drilled skill learning and many students now in college who struggle with open-ended questions and problem-solving. As a school teacher, I wished I could rescue young people from the discipline and surveillance that erased and marginalized their identities, bodies, histories, and communities. I wanted to facilitate self-directed and collaborative problem-solving, perspective-taking, and social-emotional relationships. I wanted to celebrate cultural pluralism and teach critical engagement with the world. Yet I was young and felt ill-equipped to improve the system, let alone improve my thinking about myself as a person. During his TEDx talk, 13-year-old Logan LaPlante coined the phrase hack schooling. He was frustrated with the schooling process and wanted to direct himself toward questions and problems that he was curious about and concerned with. This is what I wanted to do, to hack schooling, from a child-centered and social justice perspective. Hackers are those who put themselves into particular circumstances and force those circumstances to respond. Computer hackers break into computers to mine data. Graffiti artists paint messages in public spaces. Activists block actions taken by companies or governments. Even some teachers hack standard curriculum that ignores diverse cultures and histories, like adding family history projects, bilingual storytelling, and gender diverse literature. Hackers disrupt ideas, norms, and systems. Becoming a teacher educator a decade ago, my goal was to help teachers create just, equitable, and inclusive schools. Yet I was preoccupied with my own healing.
Personally, I struggled with perfectionism, surveillance over my body and gender expression, and anxiety about my self-worth. In order to effectively hack school, I needed to hack my own life. When I was diagnosed with breast cancer last November, life had hacked me. Rather than force myself into a circumstance and disrupt it, cancer had forced itself on me. The disease intervened in my life, in my body-mind system, and brought my struggles into stark relief. I wasn't perfect, I was sick. My body had changed, and with every treatment it changed more. I couldn't stop it. I lost my hair, my eyebrows, my eyelashes. I had many scars. I had seemingly lost control of everything. Once I was diagnosed, though, I wanted to flip the script. Instead of life hacking me, I wanted to disrupt it. So during the past 9 months, I've created what I call life hacks. Now on the internet, you will find DIY life hacks that aim to make life easier, like cutting a tennis ball open to create a key holder, or clamping down on your rolled up toothpaste roll with a binder clip. And while I too want my life made easier by getting stronger Wi-Fi through a soda can, or making heart-shaped hard-boiled eggs with chopsticks, I want to talk to you today about a more challenging type of life hack that encourages us to be unafraid to disrupt our lives. I propose we respond to circumstances forced upon us with the active intention of unlearning harmful thoughts and actions in order to achieve permanent healing and deep learning. The life hack I want to focus on today is that of creativity during illness. Creativity is the act of making something new and valuable for oneself and or others. To do this, I actively and regularly looked to nature as my mentor and then wrote about my observations. I wanted to heal my emotional pain from cancer, unlearn harmful thinking, actions, and ways of being in the world that had haunted me since childhood. My past negative and depressive ways of being could not be in charge. I had no choice. Cancer needed all my energy. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Standing on bare ground, my head bathed by the blithe air and uplifted into infinite space, all mean egotism vanishes. I became the transparent eyeball. I am nothing. I see all. The currents of the universal being circulate through me. I am part or particle of God." During my times this year, in nature, on hikes, at the beach, in the garden, I became transparent, a part of the sensory moment. I didn't forget about cancer, but I allowed nature to teach me how to live with it. My mentor is the bird. In cultures around the world, birds symbolize love, peace, and cheer, cunning, intelligence, and change. Birds defy borders and adapt to limited natural landscapes. They're strong and fragile. Their songs and calls fill the air. Birds are creatures that have a powerful impact on healing and therapy. The Audubon Society describes people with dementia interacting with stuffed birds and birds at feeders. Bird sounds and behaviors trigger happy and soothing memories for these elderly people. In Los Angeles, Lauren Linder started a bird sanctuary to help wounded veterans and parrots heal side by side. Like humans, birds have agency and act autonomously. We both have emotional intelligence and need social contact. In our own backyard, we watch local birds. Then we rescued a parrot the same day as my cancer diagnosis. Observing bird behavior has been a welcome distraction for us personally and for many others in pain from illness, disease, or trauma. Struggling with the prison of cancer, I sought freedom, even when my body could not provide it. I looked to the sky, to birds in particular, whose flight and fancy inspired me to find peace, excitement, beauty, and liberation from my containment. Nature is poetry. The movement of a flock of birds is the movement of words. The image of a feather takes shape through the senses. I have written about birds many times during cancer. In the remainder of our time today, I'll illustrate the life hack that I've used of using creativity during illness. I'll share a few poems with you that I've written, and after each one, talk about the ways in which the creative process of poetry writing and the process of listening to birds has helped me unlearn harmful disciplining of emotions and surveillance of the body. And if you like counting, there are five poems. If there were a million, I would have numbered each one, but there are five. Joyful, melancholy, old and new, fly, squawk, hold, heel. Joyful, melancholy, a bird's eye view. In this poem, I embrace a wide range of emotions. I'm working to unlearn social messages heard since childhood, like don't cry, don't be sad, don't be scared. The bird is both. It soars in the wind joyously, and then it loses some of its young from the nest. I am the bird as I hold myself through these emotions. I allow myself to be present to the healing. It is the bird's eye view I take on social messages about suppressing emotions. I'm not these messages. They didn't create me. I am from childhood memory, but I am also new and ready to be more myself as I embrace my range of emotions that come and go like a bird in flight. Even the parrot sitting on my head with claws lightly purchasing against my scalp and beak tending to my curls doesn't help me feel more myself. I search the map for a direct route to find me. Instead, I find bridges, lots of bridges, with broken boards, rotting wood, narrow crevices full of ice. I don my super cape and cross the boards frantically as if I can control their breaking or my own rending. I don't want to do extraordinary things. I don't want bridges to cross. I shove my cape in my knapsack. The bird zigzags a path above me. It's my familiar. It clutches my map in its beak, shows me what it means to be ordinary. I let the bird guide me home. In this poem, I'm thinking about how a bird's eye view is sometimes ineffective at managing the physical pain of going through cancer and its treatment. I cannot look at my disease from above. I cannot ignore borders and barricades like a bird in flight can. And yet, by the end of the poem, the bird is my familiar. It is through writing that I've navigated my loss of self during cancer. Through writing, I've allowed myself to resist the social messages that people going through extreme illnesses are superheroes or warriors. Sometimes we're too weak for that. This also relates to the social messages girls hear that as a woman, you can do it all. You can have cancer, you can be an amazing mother, you can have a career, you can care for yourself and your home with ease. This bird helped me to become present to my struggle. Because the bird itself is not extraordinary. It's a creature with wings that can fly. It has feathers with physical properties that engage the air. It makes its own path, but it doesn't listen to external pressure to perform or be super. During this poem, I've allowed myself to shed expectations and hopes and be physically present to my body self. It is in that space of writing and listening that I created a new home. I'm thankful for the body healing. I had a terrible cough last Sunday, so we're going in good places. Gliding my paddle through the choppy waters, egrets and pelicans beside me dip into their delicacies. I spot a balloon marooned in the estuary's thick mud, its turquoise foil shining in the sun, a remnant of some child's birthday, now an ocean snack. I moor the kayak and squish through the mud, the earth between my toes. I pull the balloon from the slime and make a new bird trail. Here. The cancer is a small stone inside. Its infiltration temporary like the foil balloon. Cancer is nothing. I breathe the salty air and become the pelican's wingspan, the rippling bay, the wind in reeds and hair. I am extended. We will not suffocate. We will glide through choppy waters, life's arms stretched around us. We are connected. Cancer is nothing. We are whole. In this poem, I'm unlearning the relationship between being sick and being whole. As a child, I had not been in school with many children with physical, emotional, or cognitive differences, or those with chronic illnesses. I grew up in the age of discrimination against people with AIDS. I was embarrassed of my dad's cancer, his hair loss, his nausea, when I was 7. I had internalized the idea that those with illness or disease were separate from those who were healthy, like me. As a child, I implicitly believed that being healthy was being whole, while having a disability or an illness meant someone was incomplete or lacking. As an adult, I've been working on internalized ableism for a long time. When I got sick,
After working so hard to stay healthy, after working so hard not to be depressed, the binary collapsed. That day in my kayak,
and later through my poem,
I followed the flight of birds into the estuary and realized that birds, the natural space, was whole, just like every living thing. Having a disease, having a chronic illness, having a special need,
does not make us broken.
Seeking solace, I found interconnectedness.
Beginnings from endings.
I want to be the cancer me, even when I'm cancer-free. I won't return to worries, stomach aches, fears of rejection, expectations that I don't matter, that I'm not liked, that I'm not worth a listen, that I'm a shadow of myself. 10 months of cancer treatment is a gestation. I scratch the ground, looking for traces in the sand, looking for kernels in the crop. Whispers of my ending beginning, I lift my arms to the sky, gathering clouds and birds, gathering courage from long needle sticks, nerves and breezes. The cancer me is new and old. Although uncertain, I am here. I've watched this belly grow, this blood flow, my water plea for the heavens to know me and to consecrate my downy hair for this fresh start. George Lakoff writes that we live by metaphors. In this poem, I'm unlearning the social message that disease is something to get rid of, to fight, to beat, to destroy. These violent metaphors devalue people's journeys during disease or illness. In this poem, I'm a bird making a nest. I'm gathering new resources gained, learned, and lived during my cancer year. Writing has allowed me to envision this new power to produce new life. During cancer, I have found that creativity heals, and I won't see illness or disease the same way again. Up in the sky, the crow flies, heavy black wings, a caw sounding through silence. It knows the world. Across the garden, the hummingbird spins, rapid streaks of color, its buzz casting spells by the second. It knows magic. On the tallest treetops, a wild parrot sits, gleaming green with dancing claws that laugh at capture. It knows escape. In the curved tiles of the roof, a house sparrow chirps proudly, grasses, fluff, and leaves stuffed inside the eaves, preparing a nest. It knows family. We play this game. Which bird is your favorite? But I cannot choose between the world, magic, escape, and family. Each holds a little part of me. Each one tells me something about myself. I stamp my foot during life's game. I won't choose. Then another bird swoops past my face, almost landing in my heart. In this poem, I'm unlearning the social value placed on hierarchies. As children, we are taught to derive pleasure from our team winning and beating another team. We're taught to get to the front of the line, be the first one. We're praised when our performance is recognized as the best. We're taught that society chooses, and we better be the one chosen. In this poem, I disrupt this idea. I live in the both and. Every bird has value. Every human has inherent dignity and worth. It is through close observation and writing that I have learned to appreciate this in a new way. By the same sense, I've learned to value myself during cancer. After initial tests, one of the nurses told me, "Let's hope you get a good path," meaning that my pathology report hopefully would tell us that no cancer spread. That would be a good path. But I stamp my foot. I won't choose between what has happened to me, a bad path, and one that is good. I am living with both, with all of it. I am all the birds. I am a flock. I am one. I believe it's necessary to hack or disrupt our lives in order to become better teachers, parents, and adults, especially in the lives of our children. This means identifying damaging assumptions, hierarchies, and binaries that impact us, and applying specific tools that work for you, whatever tools work for you and me, to analyze and redress these internalized harms. To close, I want to tell you a short story. In third grade, I sat in my classroom while my mother and teacher had a report card conference. The teacher talked about my schoolwork and then told my mom that I was quite the mother hen in class and to my peers.
although I wasn't sitting at the table when my teacher said this. I heard it, and it stuck. Throughout my childhood and young adulthood, I never interpreted being quite a mother hen as a compliment. Rather, from my teacher's tone and her use of the word quite, I interpreted quite a mother hen to mean I was overbearing and controlling. Today I'm here to disrupt the act of assuming the worst about myself. Being a hen is a gift. I check the environment. Peck. I care and nurture. Peck, peck. I tend to the sick and the young. Peck, peck, peck. I teach towards social justice. Peck, 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 peck. I love fiercely. Peck, 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 peck. I am quite the mother hen. As a call to action, I'm grateful for the words of UU Reverend Sharon Wiley, who understands the theme of this talk. May we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. We are all afflicted, and we are all comfortable. May we be a comfort and a confrontation. May we here find peace in times of tumult. May we invite tumult into lives of peace. May we here find calm in times of restlessness. May we here allow restlessness to evolve into action. May we... Let this be the place you consider what you've never considered. Let this be the place you imagine for yourself something new and unthinkable. May life bring dreams of new ways of being in the world. May we be unafraid to disrupt our own lives. Thank you. I love you. I'm so lucky to be here with you. I'm so thankful. These are for you to keep. It has one of my poems on the back. It's just a special. Drew said, I'm like Oprah, and you get a gift, and you get a gift, and you get a gift. So everybody gets a gift because you are my gift. Thank you.